Are we ready?
Yes.
We're ready to take ourselves down into that other intelligence, which we're going to talk about, and to get an experience of that other intelligence that's inside of us by focusing on our breath first for a few breaths, and then we'll make the sound of Om together. Breathing in. And with a deep in breath. Ananda, a wonderful teacher, a path for personal spiritual transformation. Good morning, good morning.
For newcomers, welcome.
Oh, yes.
Newcomers
welcome.
Are welcome.
Hi.
You're very welcome. I'm Steve.
Hi, Gladys.
Welcome, Gladys.
Good to meet you.
Did you check us out on Meetup?
Yeah.
What did I saw?
And I'm a member here. Church. I saw it there. It's, oh, let's check it out.
Thank you.
A dues-paying member. All right. We like to start off by making the sound of Om together. You may have heard that sound as you came down the hallway. Using the vibration, sharing the energy in the room. Take us down into a place in our hearts where we're receptive for scripture. Last week, Alberto brought up a good question as we were going over these verses. He said, well, whoever wrote this, how do they know that? On what authority are they writing this? Didn't you have a question, something like that?
Close to that.
Alberto's inquisitive. And I came up with some answer. I always have answers. I make them up if I don't know for sure.
Well, you gave me a good answer.
I thought we'd start off today with a verse from Rumi that points to that question. First, an introduction to what we're doing here. Our subject in general is Sri Swami Satchidananda's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. Are you familiar with the Bhagavad Gita?
Just
a little bit. Sri means sir in Sanskrit. Sri and Swami is teacher. So Sir Teacher Satchidananda. Satchidananda is not his birth name or given name. It's a spiritual name that he was given, or perhaps he chose, I'm not sure, when he entered spiritual life. He had a family and children and a business. He gave, like Buddha, he gave that up for spiritual life. Satchidananda. Sat is truth, Sanskrit word for truth. Chit, Sanskrit word for reality, what's really real, as opposed to what changes all the time. Satchitananda. Truth, reality, and ananda is bliss, or joy, or happiness. So he took that name, or was given that name, to remind him that the source of happiness is the truth based on a reality that we're going to be investigating today. Leads one opportunity to be in a state of happiness more, or perhaps in a state of bliss all the time. Anybody here in a state of bliss all the time?
Maybe more.
These teachings are designed to show us a path to head in that direction. So we might taste it now and then, experience it more and more. Our primary focus will be on verses with practical spiritual advice. Rather than go through the Bhagavad Gita verse by verse, I've just picked out ones that offer practical spiritual advice, and I can give some background. But first, I'm going to look at Rumi. Rumi, two kinds of intelligence. All right, here we go. There are two kinds of intelligence. Okay? Perhaps we thought there's just one, mind, with all its names and abstractions. Abstractions. What do we have in the mind? We have names for things. So I don't have this desk in my mind or the experience of it. I have the word desk. Desk, it's a word in my mind. We have names for everything. And that's what Rumi is going to talk about here. Two kinds of intelligence. There are two kinds of intelligence, one acquired as a child in school, memorizes facts and concepts from books and from what the teacher says. Collecting information from the traditional sciences. As well as from the new sciences. One kind of intelligence. With such intelligence, you rise in the world. You can go to Silicon Valley and become a multimillionaire coder or developer. You get ranked ahead or behind others. Anybody remember getting ranked in school? You get A, you get D, you get F. My father taught me when I was a kid, A's for awful, B's for bad, C's for comma, D's for dandy, and F is fine.
Oh, God. Oh, my gosh.
Awful, bad, common, dandy, fine. We got ranked in school, didn't we? You get ranked ahead or behind others with such intelligence, and you rise in the world. In regard to your competence in retaining information. Retaining information. Remember how tough it was to learn the multiplication tables? Did anyone have trouble with that? And then you finally had to get it, eventually. You retain information. You stroll with this intelligence in and out of fields of knowledge, getting always more marks on your preserving tablets. More marks on your preserving tablets.
That's your permanent record.
Your record, yeah. You know, St. Peter looks at the tablet when you arrive and says, let's see. In and out of fields of knowledge, getting always more marks on your preserving tablets. This sounds familiar, doesn't it? But the way he puts it makes it sound kind of, Let's go on. There is another kind of tablet. One already completed and preserved inside you. A spring overflowing its spring box. A freshness in the center of the chest. This other intelligence does not turn yellow or stagnate. Doesn't turn yellow or stagnate, even if you have memory loss, like when you get older. It doesn't turn yellow or stagnate. It's fluid and doesn't move from outside to inside. It doesn't move from outside to inside. F- through conduits of plumbing learning. This second knowing is a fountainhead from within you, moving out. I'm guessing it was from this fountainhead that the ancient wise men, the seers, wrote the Bhagavad Gita. As I read it, it doesn't seem like it came out of their intellect and abstractions. Rather, they somehow experienced these things that we're going to see in the scriptures with a different kind of intelligence. If this doesn't make sense, that's good, because it's poetic, isn't it? It's not designed to satisfy our minds with, anyway. Rather, it's designed to evoke a feeling in us, a feeling.
It's to help us function, in a sense, from help us function from birth.
Yes.
And it's the opposite to the first one you expressed. One is from acquired, outside in, the other one from in, out. It's always a positive and a negative in life.
Some scriptures remind us that part of a challenge of our spiritual path is to learn how to empty the mind of all that stuff that's accumulated there. And in that emptiness, to experience with our other kind of intelligence what's real, what's truly real.
But it's incredible, but the one that you came with, which is the one inside, you can't erase that one. That's something that you just can't eliminate. You eliminate the ones that you put in.
Right.
That other one, if you eliminate one, you lose life, more likely. Because
yes.
Like you said, Lord, even if you lose your memory, you still have that inside.
Like a spring box inside you.
It's like the computer when the computer is, you know, they give you the computer and there are gray areas you cannot touch but others you can click on. Same thing, don't you? Same thing.
Yeah. Interesting analogy.
Something to think about. These sorts of poetic remarks don't bear explanations really well. And yet somehow if we can open ourselves to get it, then we can move on. So let's go on to the Bhagavad Gita and see what the lessons are there. Bhagavad Gita. We've already studied chapter 2, verses 7, 11, 12, and 13. I'm going to go over them now. If you have questions, ask questions. And we're heading to verse 14, which is we haven't studied yet. But please ask questions. I am weighed down with weak-mindedness. I am confused and cannot understand my duty. I beg of you to say for sure what is right for me to do. I am your disciple. Please teach me. I have taken refuge in you. This is the great warrior, prince, king Arjuna, who has tried to figure out what to do in one of the most terrifying, challenging situations a human being could come into. He's right at the onset of a great war, where a lot of people will be killed, and it's a civil war. And who are fighting? His brothers, his uncles, his teachers are on both sides. It's a civil war. So he's drawn in his mind different ways. His mind is trying to figure out what's the right thing to do. I can't figure it out. What should I do here? What seems wrong to do here? He's all in his mind. And this is the verse where Arjuna, the warrior prince, opens his heart for the teachings that are going to come next. And who is his teacher? His charioteer, the man driving his chariot. who it turns out is an incarnation of the divine come to give spiritual wisdom. He's called Krishna. There are different incarnations of the divine in the Indian tradition. One is Krishna, Lord Krishna. So Arjuna is talking to Krishna. He says, teach me, I've taken refuge in you. Questions? This is the teaching of Lord Krishna. As we hear these scriptures again and again, Satchidananda reminds us that we should be open to those scriptures that somehow capture us. Make a point of memorizing and remembering one word or a couple of words that somehow are a linchpin for something that we need to know or a direction we want to head in. You might want to be open to see if any of these words attract you in that manner. I have another translation of the Bhagavad Gita. I can bring it with me, written by poet Stephen Mitchell, whose words I have memorized. I find them more memorable than Satchidananda's translation. Here we go. Lord Krishna says, you are grieving for those who should not be grieved for, while uttering would-be words of wisdom. The wise grieve neither for the living nor the dead. So what kind of grieving is he talking about here? We all know that if someone dear to us dies, we go into grieving. It's as natural as when we get hungry or thirsty, or as our heart beats. We don't ask our hearts to beat, do we? We don't say, I think we'll take a breath now. No, these are all natural things. And grieving seems to show up as a natural thing, doesn't it? Well, there's some other aspect of grieving he's talking about here. Perhaps our attachment to it, or our mentally abstracting and thinking about it rather than just experiencing it, having it, letting it go, and grieving is ready to leave. The wise grieve neither for the living nor the dead. There never was a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor any of these ruling princes, and neither will there ever come a time when we cease to be. I struggled with this personally in my mind. I'm a computer engineer, so things come to me through my mind usually first. We have a concept in Christianity called the soul, don't we? It seems to be something that was there before we were born. Or, I don't know, maybe St. Peter put it there as we popped out at some point. We have stories about it. But one attribute in the Christian tradition is the soul seems to hang around after the body rots away. Although there is a tradition that the bodies will come back into physicality and souls will re-enter on Judgment Day, isn't there? Some intellectualizing in the Bible like that. There never was a time when I did not exist. We know that's not the physical body, the I that's referred to here. Nor you, nor any of these ruling princes. And neither will there ever come a time when we cease to be. What's the name for that essence that was around before we manifested and stays after we no longer manifest?
Spirit.
We have names for it. And the names probably get in the way of our seeing deeply this. So these are texts that are meant to be understood with their other intelligence. And when we name it, it will get in the way. And we're going to name it, maybe as a stepstone to help us remember so that we can get in touch with another intelligence. Never will it be a time when we cease to be.
How did you overcome the fact that it gave you a hard time to understand it? How did you came Anna, because if you would have said to me, if you wouldn't want to explain it to me, I would have still had a hard time to understand what I was trying to tell me. So how did you came with that?
I understood that in a sense it was not to be understood. As long as I try and understand it, I'm going to set up a barrier to it. And yet that's what I continually do. I've chosen to come and teach this. How do I teach? I talk words. And I know, I sense that this is something I have to somehow come to terms with, whatever my mind thinks. Whatever explanations my mind comes up with, I am willing to be open to it and see what comes up. That's where I am. Yes.
For me, it's kind of like meditation, where we're letting go of the thoughts. They're still there floating by, but we have less attention to them and are open to being attentive to the other, which may come from within, which is challenging. Because the mind does what the mind does, it thinks. So I see a kind of connection or similarity there.
Yes, with meditation. And according to those who are familiar with these verses, Satchitananda, another student of the Bhagavad Gita, is Eknath Eswaran, a teacher in California. He ran the Blue Mountain Center of Meditation. He passed recently. In his understanding, the Bhagavad Gita came from people who spent a lot of time in deep meditation. And from that deep meditation, these scriptures came forth.
Steve, would you be willing to requote the Tao Te Ching with the name?
Yes, Sam is referring to the Tao Te Ching. The Tao Te Ching, another scriptural work that we have studied here, the Tao Te Ching. The Tao means the way things are. It has many different meanings. It's like truth, the way things are, the Tao. It also means energy. The first verse of the Tao Te Ching is, the Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The nameless is the eternally real. Naming is the source of all particular manifestations. Tables, God, fingers, abstractions. Naming is the source of all particular manifestations. Goes on, free from desire, you realize the mystery. Free from desire. Well, that's a whole other topic, isn't it? Free from desire, you realize the mystery. Free from cravings and aversions, all mental concepts, which we try to let go of in meditation, we realize or experience the mystery. Hmm. Was that it, Sam?
Beautiful. Thank you. Not easy to...
I find I need to hear these things again and again and again and again. And I never know what particular day something that just passed by me won't come to rest at home. Well, I'm willing to invest time into these scriptures. My teacher, Eknath Eswaran, says, you can go on your spiritual path by digging a little hole here and looking around, digging another little hole here, digging another hole here and looking. His recommendation is start digging and keep digging until you find water.
Go deeper within oneself.
Right. So rather than choose a little bit here, that's not working. Go here, I don't believe that. Go here. They're all nuts. They're not like me. Those ancient people, they had weird ideas. They're not like me. Pick one and go deep and be open to find the water.
What about the person who is interested, not repelled by, but interested in the many places out there?
There's no right or wrong or good or bad about it. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. People interested in this. We have a friend who loved to go to this seminar about this tradition. Later on went to another one. It was wonderful for her. She got a lot of satisfaction out of it. And no judgment.
So you can still go deeper but in a different way, because there's so much beauty in them. If you, for me, you know, just if I look at the essence of it all comes down to, there was a verse in there earlier, I can't remember right the second, but it just spoke to me, because, you know, I had studied somewhere else for a year, and then prior to that I was studying something else, but then there's this whole other layer of who I am spiritually over here that sort of overlays all of it, and I used to have a hard time with that, and spoke to a spiritual guide about it, who was, you know, wonderful that they're gentle and loving. It's like, this is okay. You don't have to lock yourself into one course and go there. It is okay. So it helped me to have some self-acceptance about that.
Wonderful.
You know,
what I'm hearing you say is your intelligence is leading you down a certain path, and it's working for you. That's what I'm hearing.
And on the path, there are,
yes,
little areas kind of shooting off, but, you know, in essence, it all is still is all the one.
Yes.
Trying to keep coming back to that divine essence.
Go for it. Go for it. Go for it. Our paths that we're led down, if it comes from some place inside of us, not a place we figured out, but the way we're drawn, that's our path, and we celebrate that. And we're not open to intellectualizing that will take us off of what we know is working for us and is right for us, whatever that is. All of these teachings are meant to see if something awakes in us that is right for us. And if it's not, well, just let that go. And thank you for sharing. Yes.
I think if you dig deep enough, you get to the same water.
Yes.
That's right. Very good. I like that imagery. Very good. Yeah, when I was at work, something happened, and I was about to blame someone, and I said, you know, I've done similar mistakes in my life, too. And, you know, so I just stayed quiet, and, you know, just stayed eye contact with this person. And you can see this forgiveness just, you know, let go within that person. It's nice to not, or just realize, I guess, not to say anything, because nothing need be said.
We draw from different traditions here all the time, the Christian, mm-hmm. Tao Te Ching, the Bhagavad Gita, and I read different ones every day. Somehow they all seem to be heading in the same direction, just a different light shining on the same thing. Thirteen, that which is embodied, our physicality, experiences the body's childhood, youth, and old age, and in time acquires another body. That's particular aspect of the Hindu tradition, that we acquire other bodies. This does not disturb one whose mind is calm. From my understanding, in our Western tradition, we have a lot of concern about dying. I'm going to die. I'm not ready to quite yet. Some people I know have died. We have a lot of mental, abstract issues about death. And we have some gut issues about death. It's scary. Fear. According to this scripture, that which is embodied, our physicality, experiences the body's childhood, youth, and old age, and in time rots away, but some aspect of it acquires another body. This does not disturb one. Mind is calm. For me, this verse is like an attraction. It's the sales pitch before we find out what to do. Why do we want to head down this path? Have a calm mind. All right, so that's what we've covered so far, and we have about 7 minutes. We'd like to close at 11:05, and we'll launch on some new things. The difference between the permanent and impermanent, the real and the unreal. We know what's impermanent, our bodies, our experiences of the world. These things all change. Our bodies certainly change. Our experience of the world changes. How do we know about the world? Through experience. Sometimes we experience the same thing differently. What's the difference between the permanent and the impermanent? What is permanent? What is permanent? And your discussion of meditation is on target, because we'll see that perhaps through meditation we can experience what is permanent versus what we sense in the world, which is not permanent. And perhaps through meditation we can sense what is real versus the impermanent things, which in a way aren't real, are always changing. I think what we'll do today for the rest of the session, I'll go over these verses. 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Oh, that's a lot, six. Well, we'll go through them, and then perhaps next time we'll have a discussion of it. Does that work?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. As senses contact the object of the senses, feelings of heat and cold, pain and pleasure occur, Arjuna. These sensations come and go. They're impermanent. Patiently endure them, great prince. Sorry, folks, but no more complaints if you go with this verse. We're not allowed to complain that it's too cold or this hurts, or to worry about what discomfort we might feel tomorrow, or anticipate with great excitement what's coming tomorrow. All those are not in our hands, are they? They're in the hands of Providence, the universe, or God. Senses contact objects of senses, heat and cold, pain and pleasure. They come and go. They're impermanent. Patiently endure them with one of our greatest treasures, patience. In fact, that person who is not tossed about by sense experiences and always stays balanced in pain and pleasure is fit to experience immortality. Again, part of the sales pitch in a way here. Getting our interest. That person who is not tossed about by sense experiences. Well, there goes all the advertisements on television that say if you take this pill, You will feel like this, and if you do this, you will be like that. All that advertising. Not tossed about by sense experiences and always stays balanced in pain and pleasure, is fit to experience immortality. This doesn't mean that we don't do what's ours to do. Experiencing pain and pleasure, we may experience something's ours to do. That hurts. Take my finger off that stove. It's always proper to do what our heart directs us to do. And are we attached to pain and pleasure? What is not has never been, and what is always is. The truth about the real and the unreal has been realized by the seers. The wise man. It's coming up now. The truth. What is real, and what's never been. What is always is. I'm sorry, what is not has never been. Yeah. What is not has never been. And what is always is. This truth about the real and the unreal has been realized by the seers. What is? Know that all this vast universe is pervaded by that which is indestructible. No one can destroy what is everlasting and imperishable. This vast universe is pervaded by that which is indestructible. No one can destroy what is everlasting and imperishable. Our minds might like to think about Einstein and E equals mc squared, and matter transforms into energy, atomic bombs. Nothing ever goes away. That's a mental construct. It's true, of course, a mental construct. This is a different kind of indestructibility. The indwelling one, capital O, is eternal. The indwelling one is eternal, indestructible and immeasurable. The bodies of the indwelling one are impermanent. So what is this? Capital O-1, is it a soul, spirit? None of the names are actually the right name. We do like to give it a name.
Can I ask you, what is Arjuna?
Arjuna is the name of the warrior prince, the great prince, the leader of the armies, the man, the general, whose responsibility is to lead his army into war. That's his duty. He has hundreds, thousands of men looking up to him for the command to move forward and advance. He's the leader. So they're all depending on him. Now he's going through this spiritual crisis, and his spiritual advisor, Lord Krishna, is giving him some advice. All this advice happens in a timeless moment, in a sense.
This is the one that I have to decide between duty and action, I think.
Right, he doesn't know what to do, and he wants Lord Krishna's, what should I do? I don't want to fight. I should fight. I don't want to kill my neighbors. What should I do? He's all up in his head, intellectualizing and abstracting, isn't he? So does Lord Krishna say, okay, you want my advice? Just attack. No. He starts talking from that other intelligence, does he? It's going to take Arjuna quite a while to get it, because he's talking in a whole other consciousness. A whole other consciousness. Arjuna just wants to know what to do. What should I do? Is it okay to go fight? Lord Krishna knows that just like in us, what is ours to do is in our hearts, our spiritual path. Yeah, we're going to close now. It's in our hearts. So anyway, I'll just do the last verse and then we'll close. The indwelling one is eternal. Whoever thinks that Atman, or the capital S self, does the killing or can be killed misunderstands. That self doesn't kill, nor is it ever killed. That spirit, that whatever soul. Whoever thinks that does the killing or can be killed misunderstands. That self doesn't kill, nor is it ever killed. I'll leave it with that. Any final questions before we go into our own space?
When you say self, you talk about my spirit. When I say myself, I talk about my spirit. Is that what it is?
The Atman, or the capital S self, is something like that other intelligence, as opposed to the lower S self, which is how we think about things and figure things out. Our ego, we call it in modern English. Lower S self is our ego, trying to figure everything out and think things through and figure out in our minds things. We understand them. The capital S self is a part of us that isn't involved in thinking. Rather, sometimes actions just flow out of us. We just know what's ours to do. And that comes from the Atman, or capital S self. Other questions before we close? Great, great question. We need to hear all this stuff more than once. I do. Let's focus on our breath now for a few breaths, about 3 breaths. Feel the breath going in and out. Deep in breath. Shanti. Shanti, Shanti.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for.